Well, call the meeting to order. There are a couple of announcements, but first of all, my legislative assistant, I came in this morning and there was a sign at my office. And I have to tell you, I will share the sign with you. It says, "I apologize to the Irish for holding the hearing tonight." I thought it should be changed a little bit. I said I thought you should thank Representative Solberg for holding the hearing tonight to keep all of the Irish out of trouble tonight. So I apologize if you are missing your party. We will try our best to do this in a fairly quick way. The secretary will note the roll. We have the minutes of April 18th before us. Representative Eakin, did you read the minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair, and I move the minutes.
Sorry, February 18th. Representative Eakin moves the minutes from February 18th. Any corrections? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And opposed? Carried. And then we have the joint committee hearing between the Finance Committee and the Ways and Means Committee. And Representative Dean, would you be so kind as to move?
I move those.
And Representative Dean moves the minutes of March 3rd. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And opposed. Members, the first thing on the agenda is the budget resolution.
The chair to get to the table.
Mr. Chair, I would move resolution KNRES08-1, which is the budget resolution.
Okay, the motion is be for us, and if you'd explain the resolution.
Mr. Chair and members, this is the budget resolution that we'll be following this year. It addresses the $994,404,000 shortfall that is in our budget forecast. You will see the resolution has just about all of them in the negative. The formal resolution is before us. It might be easier to look at this spreadsheet that Mr. Marks has prepared because the budget resolution requires a large, a one number for each category, and we've tried to break that out into its parts as well. So in the higher education and workforce development, we're cutting $52,575,000, but as you see, the sub caucus are $46.7 million in higher ed and $5.8 in the workforce. The cut for K-12 education is $1 million, and you can read those as you go down that list as well. But I do want to talk about health and human services. The cut in the resolution is $510. However, the additional federal FMAT, and the governor was at $386. And we've been trying our best to follow that and having lots of conversations with Washington, D.C. to see how firm that number might be. Excuse me. In the governor's supplemental budget, that changed from 386 has changed to 408. We are fairly confident that that number will be met by Washington in a very short time. And we will be handling the Health and Human Services bill at a later date. It's not part of the cuts that are coming forward to us today. So we'll have a little bit more time to verify it. But it's been, I think, a pretty firm number that we feel comfortable in including in the budget resolution. And as I've indicated to the lead Republican, Representative Polberg, I don't know as if there's ever been a budget resolution that hasn't had some amendments to it as we go through, and we'll amend that when we find if there is additional aid coming from the federal government. Additionally, the general assistance medical care bill that will be considered later on today has a savings of $146,700,000. And so the net in the health and human service bill, even though the resolution says 710, cut will be about 155. The state government has the cut of 32. We have picked up the same tax compliance as what the governor has, a little over $20 million, and the cut there then is 12. And then in public health and housing, in this particular cut that's before us is merely the housing. The health will be carried in the health and human services bill as well. You will notice that there is a cut in the capital investment of $350,000. The forecast called for allowed for a capital investment of about $725 million. The governor had recommended $684, I believe it was, in his recommendations. That was less than the forecast, so there was about a certain amount, close to $350,000 that was in the governor's proposal, and he was spending that in some other ways. With the veto of the bill and the size of the bill right now at $680,000, is that the right number? We pick up $350,000 below what the forecast, so the resolution will reflect what has been passed by the House and capital investment. With that, I would stand for questions.
Are there any questions on the budget resolution? Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Solberg, there was a lot of discussion in this committee and others over the last couple of months about cash flow issues, short-term borrowing, the issue with the school district's reserves. The governor chose to take the additional $210 million and put it in cash flow to try and mitigate some of those effects. I'm just curious. You know, there seemed to be a lot of displeasure, being nice on your side of the aisle, around that short-term borrowing cash flow issue. So I'm just wondering why the decision to not follow the governor's recommendation and put a little bit more money in that account.
Well, all of us, Mr. Chair, Representative Hoover, all of us would probably like to have solved that problem as well, but then there would be additional cuts in education or health and human services or others. Additionally, I have been asked, and it's up with the revisers, to carry a bill that the administration has brought forward, MMB has brought forth, to try our best to help mitigate some of the payments that go out at a different timing that will hopefully address some of the cash flow. That might become a controversial bill from its perspective of when the different people or different units of government get their payments, but I think that it's an opportunity for us to have the discussion on cash flow. My very preliminary discussion with the commissioner and others in MMB is if we were to pass that bill, it will have a great deal of positive effect and help in the cash flow situation in the next fiscal year. I have not had a chance to have a complete understanding of that bill. I just said get it drafted and we'll get it hearings, and it'll probably be in Representative Carlson's Finance Committee, and we'll try to go forward with that to help them with cash flow.
All right, and Mr. Chair, and Chair Solberg, if we look at what's on the agenda today with the budget resolution, the cut bill, the tax bill, and the GAMC, we're not meeting the total bottom line number. So can you talk a little bit about what your caucus's plan is for how we get to the 990-404?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Holberg, if you look at this in the budget resolution, we're down to 999-404. So I think the total package is right before you right now on this.
Well, Mr. Chair, I understand that, but if you add the budget bill 1671 as it sits at 206,995, call it 207, 105 for the tax bill, if you accept the 408,425 of the federal money, I don't think that adds up to 994.
Representative Holberg, the total cut in Health and Human Services is 710. That includes 408 from the FMAP, the 146 from the GMC fix, and then the expected target for that division is negative 154. That's built into this budget resolution.
Mr. Chair, my question isn't about the budget resolution. It's about the timing of when and how do we get to the 994. We're not going to make it there tonight. So moving forward, I mean, what is the plan? And if somebody wanted to look at the total picture instead of this piecemeal, at what point would they have the total picture?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, no matter who's in charge, the total picture is probably when you say sine die. But I think the total picture is right before you right now. The additional bills that will be coming through will be Health and Human Services will be a separate bill, and then Education will be a separate bill. That is the plan as it goes right now. We know that every plan has to have some flexibility on it. But if you're looking at the total plan of how we address the budget problem that we have before us right now, it's right in front of you.
And Mr. Chair and Chair Solberg, would it be reasonable that to assume that these two bills would be done before Easter?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would think not.
Okay, and then...
And Mr. Chair, if I may, I think that that will give us a little bit more time as well. To make sure that our number that we are getting from the federal government is a little bit surer as well. I'm confident of it, but it will also be able to tie down that number if we wait just a bit.
All right, and then if I might, at one point when we were in the majority, we had a plan A and a plan B. And so in that vein, given the discussion around the unallotment lawsuit, et cetera, do you have a plan B if, in fact, the court rules that the governor's unallotments cannot stand?
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I have been in public office for a long time, and I get lots of emails once in a while saying, I'm in court, solve my problem for me, whether it be a divorce or child support or I got a DWI or traffic, and I keep reminding them that there's a separation of powers. And this particular lawsuit now is in the court. I have no idea how they will rule, or if they rule. If and when they rule, and they'll have to rule sometime, what that decision is, I have no idea, but I will tell us here just exactly what I tell all my constituents when they want me to solve their difficulties with the court. We should not interfere with the court at this time, and we'll cross that bridge when it happens.
Well, Mr. Chair, Chair Solberg, I don't know as far as interfering with the court. Some people like to be prepared for the what if. And I'm just curious, it appears that there hasn't been any planning for that eventuality if it becomes so.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I don't say there wasn't some planning going on or discussion going on, but to bring forward something, we've been cautioned to make sure we don't interfere with the courts.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Solberg, a question I have, and we've touched on it just briefly, I thought I might get into it, but this FMAP money, $408 million, there was quite a lot of discussion when Commissioner Hansen was here about this FMAP. I think we spent a lot of time talking about that, and mainly from the standpoint of how uncertain that was and what the alternative plan was if indeed that didn't come, because it was very, very speculative at that time. You probably remember that conversation. My question now is, we've got this included in with the proposal. You said that you've had conversation with some folks in Washington, been in close touch. Have we got more and better information now about the possibility of this, or do you indeed have, as you suggested to the commissioner, a different plan in case that doesn't come through?
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, whenever you put together, as you stated as well when we had the discussion earlier, every even the forecast is a forecast.
Yeah.
And you were very supportive of the governor's, including the 387 in there. Rightly so, I think we questioned that. And we questioned it for a couple of reasons, to make sure that we have a good understanding if that would have a good possibility to come forward, and is that the right number to come forward. There's been an awful lot of conversations, not me personally, but with state officials and the NCSLR, state national organizations, Council of State Governments, with the my understanding with the governor's office in Washington, D.C., not only how certain it might be, but what the number would be. When the governor submitted his budget recommendations, his supplemental budget recommendations to us last week, included in that was a revised number of not 387, but 408. I think I feel much more comfortable now than I did in January about the 387. It's made some good progress in Washington, D.C. If that doesn't come through, as I have indicated before, there will be a revised budget resolution. But I also think that there, and I stated this as well, that there also might even be what they call the clawback might end up happening, which would have a little bit of additional monies for this. If that doesn't happen, I think we're comfortable in going with the 408.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Chair Solberg, I agree. As you know, I'll state what I said
before.
We're
doing pretty good.
You know, we plan on what we know and what we think is going to happen, and we make adjustments accordingly. I know at that time, however, you were very concerned that there be, and other members too, not just you, about a second plan, and I thought if that concern was there, that maybe you indeed did have some sort of backup, as you thought the commissioner should. That's the only reason for my question, because I know there was we talked for quite some time about that.
I might chime in a little bit, because I think one of the people you're referring to was myself. And when that issue first surfaced in a special subcommittee of planning and fiscal policy, we were very concerned because it had passed the U.S. House twice in various forms, but it had never passed the Senate. Since then, it has now passed the Senate, and it's now in conference committee, so I think the situation has changed. The number changed a little bit as well, but I think I initially asked for a plan B there as well, if that were not to happen, but we're getting a lot of feedback both from the administration here and from other sources, as Representative Solberg pointed out, that there's a high degree of likelihood that that's going to pass. Let's see who we have next. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Solberg, go back to the 710 and HHS, 146 for general assistance, and the 154,838 is the division target, which will be delineated in the bill, which will be rolling out soon. Those are cuts, I would imagine.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, you and I both have good eyes, and you'll see in front of the one negative number, and that's exactly what it says.
Mr. Chair and Representative Solberg, the largest number on the page is the 408-425, and that's been the topic of much discussion, as well as the lawsuit of what if those two things, one happens and one doesn't happen. moving ahead, and just set that aside for a second. If we look at the 408-425 and the reductions in FMAP, which would, from my understanding, reduce the state share of MA match from 50 cents on the dollar to 38 cents on the dollar, when would those dollars come? How would they be distributed, and when would Minnesota see those dollars here, and how would they get paid out, and when?
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, I might have to have some help on that, because I don't have a great deal of knowledge on health and human services, nor do I want to.
Representative Huntley.
But Representative Huntley is here.
What they're doing, Mr. Chair, and Representative Solberg and Representative Dean, is they're extending the stimulus package from January 1, 2011, until the end of June of that year. And the net of that stimulus money is the $410 million. Someplace. And by the way, there's an additional $17 million for Minnesota counties in that same thing.
Representative Dean, dissent. Yeah. Okay, Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, this isn't my question, but Representative Huntley, is that shovel ready then? That's why they're extending it 6 months? I thought that's what the stimulus was all about. But Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, Representative Huntley can answer that later if he wants. Representative Solberg, what, and if you don't know this, maybe somebody on staff does, this FMAP, is it intertwined with the health care bill that we hear talk about being rammed through in different fashions, or is it a separate proposal, or is it contingent on that a proposal that's being moved through? And I'm just, if it is, it might be less. What's that?
If it is, it might get your support.
I doubt it, Mr. Representative Silver, but I'd be a little worried about the number and how real.
Huntley has volunteered.
Mr. Chair, it is not a part of that health care bill. It's in the jobs bill, but Representative Huntley can answer more fully.
Representative Huntley.
It was in the House bill, but as an extension of the stimulus package in the House Health Reform Bill. But now they're working off the Senate bill, and the Senate bill never had that in there. But the House has also passed it in a jobs bill, and the Senate is scheduled to it's in conference committee right now. And it's so both sides had supported it in the conference committee.
And it's a separate bill, as I understand, Mr. Chairman, right. And Representative Huntley. Very good.
Representative Holder.
I'd just like a roll call on this, please.
Okay. Roll call has been requested. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Solberg, I'm just curious. I don't seem to follow it, and I don't know if you or Representative Rukavina would know. I have a question in regards to the assigned risk pool, and if there's any cuts or transfers from that pool in the work comp.
Chair, Representative McNamara, Representative Rukavina might be able to confirm this, but I believe in the assigned risk pool there was a total of 15? Assigned risk?
That will be in the next bill, Representative.
It will be in the next bill. You will see it, but it is part of the target.
We'll be having some discussion on that in the next bill, but if you need the number now, Mr. Marks just reminded me it's 15.
15.
From the assigned risk pool, 15 million.
Mr. Chair, if I may ask, so the transfer out of the assigned risk pool is $15 million in this bill?
No. There will be discussion on that. It's a part of the budget balancing bill that will be coming up after we dispose of the budget resolution.
If Mr. Chair, if I may ask, then if I have a question about that, transfer, do you want me to save that for that bill then?
That was what I was suggesting.
Okay,
that's fine. That's yep. would be a relevant discussion at that point. The short answer right now is that $15 million is built into that bill.
So if I can follow up real quick, Mr. Chair, thank you, and Representative Solberg. So any of the discussion about any of the cuts or transfers, you'd prefer them to wait for the other bill?
Those that would probably would be best waiting for that bill, at least those accounts that are in that bill. Now, the discussion that you were just having in Health and Human Services and so on, that would be something that would not be a part of the upcoming bill. Representative Holbert, did you have something else? Okay, well, seeing no further discussion, then Representative Solberg renews his motion that the House budget resolution dealing with the expenditures for the 2010-2011 biennium be adopted. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor. Oh, excuse me, that's right, roll call. Clerk will begin the roll.
Abler? Reinhart?
Aye.
Bunn? Carlson?
Aye.
Davids? Dean?
Nope.
Demmer?
No.
Eakin?
Aye.
Faust? Hamilton? Hillstrom?
Yes.
Holberg?
No.
Hoppe? Huntley?
Yes.
Kahn?
Yes.
Lincheski?
Yes.
Mahoney?
Yes.
Mariani? McNamara?
No.
Nelson?
Yes.
Otremba?
No.
Rood? Scalzi?
Yes.
Solberg?
Yes.
Swales?
Yes.
Tilbury? Westrum, I'm sorry.
No.
There being 13 ayes and 6 nays, the resolution does prevail. Representative Carlson, would you like to make a motion, please?
Mr. Chairman, I was just informed by one of the division chairs that he was hungry and that we should move along pretty quickly here, so I concur with that.
Well, Mr.
Chairman, this is House File 1671, the first of the...
Would you like to make a motion, Representative Carlson?
Bills, and I would like to move that we pass House File 1671... and
to the general register.
Have it go on the general register.
Representative Carlson makes that motion. Members, if it's okay, what we kind of plan to do, there will be at least one technical and amendment to do things. I would like to have Representative Carlson just give a very, very quick overview of what's in the bill now.
Yeah.
There are several articles to it as it was put together in finance. Why don't we let him go over the bill with the amendment, if that's okay. And then what we would like to do is I will take an article and see, are there any questions on that particular article? And then if that chair is here to answer any of the questions, then if we finish the questions on that article, let's say transportation, then we can go on to the next, and the chairs don't have to stay around, if that's okay. Representative Holbert?
Mr. Chair, that would be great, and we would just be interested in each of the articles, how much of the solution is taking money from funds,
sure.
How much of it is actually spending reductions, and any fee increases, if so, how much?
Okay, I think that's fair. Representative Carlson, do you want to go... do you want to go through it first, or do you want to take your amendment?
Why don't we,
amendment?
Mr. Chairman, if it's all right with you, take the amendment, and that'll put the bill in the order that we would like. The bill
Representative Carlson.
Target, but I'd like to move Amendment A-22.
Representative Carlson moves Amendment H-1671A-22.
and...
Representative Carlson, do you want to explain it?
Mr. Chairman, this amendment is mainly technical. After the staff reviewed the numbers, there were some changes there. However, there are a couple of amendments or a couple of points that I would like to make and then maybe call on the people who I've been working with. There is a substantive amendment on lines 1.4 and 1.5, and worked with Representative Hagen today on this one, and it deals with the Red River Commission, so maybe if he could just briefly comment what that's about, because we had an emergency situation.
Okay, Representative Hagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This this amendment was to restore funding for the Red River Basin Commission, and this commission has representatives from the states of Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Manitoba to manage water issues, both dealing with quality and water flooding issues up in the Red River Valley on a comprehensive basis. They're very important to making sure that projects up there are coordinated, that there's a coordinated strategy to addressing these issues, and I think that the funding is vital to the efforts up there, not just for flood reduction, but also for water quality issues as well. And this organization has been very important for that reason. And one other thing about the funding, we're looking at $90,000. We're bringing back all except for there is a 6.5% cut. But originally it was a complete elimination of the $90,000 of annual funding that was provided for the commission. This $90,000, and now it's a 6.5% cut to that, but that money does leverage an equal amount of funding from the local entities and also from the states of North Dakota and South Dakota and the province of Manitoba. So it leverages a lot of additional dollars as well, and that's the reason that we're putting this money back. And, of course, we're facing an emergency situation up there right now dealing with the flooding situation, so it's a very important issue that needs to be addressed from a comprehensive basis again. Unfortunately, water doesn't seem to respect political boundaries very much, and we need to work with the whole basin.
So. And, Mr. Chairman, another area in the amendment, just to draw attention to it, Section 12, beginning on line 1.16, this would ensure more funds are available for the dislocated workers rather than administration, and had worked with Representative Beinart on that one. So if you'd like to, Mr. Chairman, it would be all right if she quickly comment on
Representative Beinart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Carlson. Yes, what this does is take $1 million a year that was in last year's budget from the stimulus funds that was designated for our on-the-job training, and only $300,000 of that has been spent, so it's not being spent, and the idea was to get it out much more quickly than it's been moving. So because there are about 2,000 people on the waiting list for the dislocated worker program, it allows the funds to be used for their designated purpose until April 1st, and then opens them up to use by the dislocated worker program.
So, Mr. Chairman, I would describe the rest of the amendment as technical with those exceptions.
Any other questions on the amendment that's before us? I don't want to adopt it without having a complete understanding of it. Any other questions on the amendment? Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, on the amendment, line 1, page 1, line 4, it talks about line 20 in the bill, and it says to replace the delete the 228 and insert 312, but I see 228 twice on that line. Is it replacing both of them or just the one?
Staff?
Mr. Chair, it should be the second 228.
Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So we'll incorporate that.
We'll incorporate that change into your amendment. Any other questions on the amendment? Any other questions? I want people to have an opportunity to look at it. Okay, If not, then we have the amendment before us. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Okay, Representative Carlson, do you want to...
Mr. Chairman, on the bill, I'm just going to give a few introductory comments, and then, as you know, the division chairs are here to answer questions about their sections of the bill. This bill basically covers all of the divisions with the exception of early childhood higher or early childhood health and human services and the K-12 education. So that would mean that we're going to be dealing with reductions in the higher education, workforce development, the environmental natural resources, energy, agricultural and veterans affairs, housing, transportation, public safety, state government, and cultural and outdoor resources. In the bill that's currently before you, the total reductions then that the governor had recommended, to give you a benchmark, there were $206,730,000. The House reductions are $206,995,000. There was a question by Representative Holberg on what revenue would be included in the bill through increases in fees and or transfers. Tax compliance is built in with a net of $20 million. I think the total cost there was something like $26 million, if I recall correctly, to employ the auditors and so on that were necessary to achieve a net of $20 million. A mutual fund fee increase from 0.1% to 0.2% for $25 million. The workers' comp assigned risk plan that was asked about by Representative McNamara, there would be a $15 million transfer there. And we checked with the fiscal analysts to make sure that that was available, and we were told that it was. There's also a transfer of funds from the Petro Fund of $3 million, and the governor's recommendation on that particular one was $600,000. So we transferred more there, and when we get to that section of the bill, I'm sure Representative Hilty can answer any detailed questions on that. So, Mr. Chairman, I was going to just do the introductory comments, and I think what I would like to do, if it's all right with the chair, is take the transportation section first. If
Mr. Chair, we'll do that. Transportation is on page 83. Let's take a look at that and see if there are any questions on that. You want to just give a very, very quick overview. Welcome to the committee, Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, the transportation section doesn't have much general fund, and the general fund that we do get basically goes with Metro Council and Rural Transit. So the cuts that we made pretty much are in those two areas. The other accounts we have in general fund and public safety and are pretty small, and the other accounts we have are bond accounts and dedicated funds. So what we did was we took a look at the total general fund monies that the Metro Council gets in addition to the dedicated funds like the motor vehicle sales tax and leased vehicle sales tax, and added up that, see what that amount was. And we did the same to the Rural Transit because they have the same components. And then we took the percentage of the total budget for each one, and that amounted to that roughly the percent cut for Rural Transit is 14.5%, and for Metro Transit it's 85.5%, and we spread that to the target that we had. And the reduction in the target, I can give you those amounts if you want them, Mr. Chair, but basically it was a percentage cut on those. Do you want me to go further?
Mr. Leader, Representative Leader, you had a target of negative 5561. Did you make your target?
Mr. Chair, we did. We exceeded that by 150,000 because in the legislation that's been passed there's a hazmat account or a hazmat account went into the Minnesota Department of Transportation, and that was actually a duplication fee for transporters. The federal regulation, or the feds get the same, have the same regulation, so the transporters were paying a double fee, and the legislature repealed the state fee, so we have to deduct that as a deduction from the freight in MnDOT. We didn't take the total 125 or 150 out of freight. We only took the one portion and then spread the rest, 100,000 back in with the other two accounts, and that accounted for that cut. And that's the difference. We're pretty much along with the governor's cuts.
Okay. Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Leader, did you raise any fees, or did you take, other than what you just described, any money from any fund balances to use for other purposes?
Mr. Chair, and Representative Holberg, no.
All right, okay. Thank you.
Other discussion on the transportation article? Any other questions on that? Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Leader, anything in the area of MnDOT buildings or state troopers or anything like that reduced?
Representative Leader.
Mr. Chair and Representative Westrom, no, because basically they're funded out of the dedicated fund.
Keep in mind, this is general fund. Other questions? Okay, Representative Leader, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll then go down. Probably the best way to go down is right down the list. Is that okay?
That would probably be appropriate.
Okay, the next one is higher education.
I mention one thing, maybe the division chairs. When I was responding to Representative Holberg, I commented about the larger ones, but throughout the bill, you'll be hearing there were some additional fees, and they are mainly fees that were recommended by the governor.
Okay. Higher education.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy has seniority on me, so
Well, she's got green too, and
I'm nervous about my roommate who said he was hungry. I don't want him chewing on me. I would defer to my senior.
Mr. Chairman, I'm only the author. You can determine whether you're going to.
Oh yeah, thanks a lot. I got everybody mad at me already.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I'll go with beauty, and I think Representative Murphy's got the beauty.
All right.
I'm with you.
She's got zoos on page. Representative Murphy, do you want to start page 26, the zoos, the museums, Article 3. You might be working off your spreadsheet, which is different. It's not a very big appropriation, it's just a few pages. Let's see, Article 3 is on page 26.
I have it.
It's only about one page long. Any questions on that? Maybe we can expedite it by saying that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Murphy.
Our target was $2,500,000, and we made it, and it cuts.
Thank you. It's actually $2,495,000, because $5,000 is in your education bill.
Good luck. That's great.
Okay. Other questions? Anything at all on these particular cuts? They're small. That takes care of zoos, section Article 3, the zoos. It takes care of an Article 11 on page 123.
Mr. Chair.
And
Article 9.
And Article 9 as well, BFA page 77.
Mr. Chair, the minority thinks that Ms. Murphy should be able to go out and party.
Well, I'm worried about that.
I appreciate that.
You might get a gavel and I'll join her. How's that?
Actually, the pension bill is up at 8:30 tomorrow morning in committee. I've got a little work to do.
All right. Okay, then let's go to the agriculture. My stars. I didn't think anybody was.
Hold on.
Article 5, page 43.
I knew we'd get to agriculture because it starts with A.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members.
First of all, your target.
We did make our target.
And the number is?
I don't know. Ask Bill Marks. He's sitting right next to you.
Negative 6.7.
We did make that, and we made our tails target, too. And Representative Holberg, there were cuts in the ag section of the bill of 5.904. There were increases in the veterans section of $250,000, and there was a transfer in ag of $1,046,000. There were no fees added to the general fund.
And okay. Mr. Chair,
Representative Holberg,
Representative Junkie, I appreciate that. Can you tell me where the $1 million transfer comes from?
Representative Junkie,
a majority of it came from our ag fund, and a piece of the ag fund will be the ACRA fund, which is a pesticide response fund that clicks on and clicks off. The governor recommended, rather than clicking it off, when it gets full, we leave it on for another year, and we'll collect that $1 million additional. So those were governor's recs. We're just leaving it on. It's a fee that you pay, your farmer pays, your homeowner pays when they buy a pesticide, herbicide, whatever. It goes in that fund. So just governor recommended to leave it clicked on, and we did that.
All right, thank you.
And then you also have in your Article 6 the vets. You've indicated that already, the 250 additional.
250 plus 250.
That's on page 63. Any questions on those two articles? Representative McNamara?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Junkie, can you explain to me the cuts to the invasive species program on page 44?
I can.
Line 17.
Mr. Chair, in the cut out of the Invasive Species or Plant Protection Division, actually, is what it's in, and you'll see the language directed to cuts for gypsy moth and emerald ash borer. We don't think that's a duty that belongs in the Department of Agriculture, and we're doing some reform and realignment. Typically, agriculture has a job of prevention. And that's what our folks do. They check trucks at the borders. They are at the airports. USDA is at the airports checking flights coming in for seeds or bugs or germs or whatever it is. And then there's a line that's drawn. Once something gets into the state, like say emerald ash borer, then it hands off to Department of Natural Resources for control and or eradication. And we're going to make that line very clear. As we go forward with this bill, which has gotten more blurry all the time, and really define those roles and put those strengths where they belong and in which department they belong. So, Representative McNamara, we are eliminating those, technically, those tree services right now, but they did never belong, in my opinion, in that department.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Junkie, I think you make a great point that they may be more appropriate in the DNR. Did you recommend to Chair Wagenius that it be funded in her bill, and is it funded, or actually is this program just cut in the coming year?
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, the program is cut in ours. That'll be a decision to be made in upcoming years on prioritizing in other bills. We cut it. However, there is some federal money that goes along with it, some $437, I'm guessing now, $1,000. That I believe will have to be worked on a commissioner level. Whoever is going to do those duties would then qualify for that federal money.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Junkie, isn't it true that the state money is used to match federal money, and if the state money is not available? We currently on the North Shore have been quite successful in spraying for gypsy moth in different parts of the state, have had effective programs. My guess is there's probably already contracts let and preparation made for this spring spraying. So are you letting the agency know they're to cancel these in the neighborhoods where it's worked effectively, and the plan is to not continue with that program, and we're going to lose that federal money and let this pest explode?
Again, Representative McNamara, the memos have been coming fast and furious from those that think they're losing their program in the department the last week, and I understand that, and I appreciate it. But we're certainly willing over the next week or so to work forward with this, with all involved, to do what we can to preserve that federal money and any contracts that might be in place, and then prioritize going ahead with DNR. Nothing's firm. We're going to negotiate now with the Senate and the governor's office. But again, we really want to move that division out and over to DNR, and we don't have the money to fund them.
of Jim McNamara.
I respect that, but in the governor's budget, he didn't cut this. I mean, you may say you don't have the money to do it, but the governor's budget includes this. These are folks that would lose their ability to ship plant material from this state with this legislation. This is an extremely dangerous pest. We're talking about gypsy moth here. Not the emerald ash borer is serious too, but the gypsy moth, we've been successful. We're gutting a program that's been working with the idea that we're going to transfer it, but it's not funded in the transfer. I don't know if you and Representative Gugenius haven't been talking, but if you're cutting it and you're saying it should be funded by them, I would think she should be picking it up, or we're just throwing it away. We're not going to get the federal money.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jenke.
We'll continue to work ahead, Representative McNamara, and try and understand it. We've had gypsy moth in the state for 25 years. These aren't decisions that we're making. I understand that they're painful. I get that. This is what happens when we cut government. This is what happens. It's not that easy to do. I get that. The governor cut, I believe, $25 million out of RIM grants out of the bonding bill the other day, and we lost $35 million of federal money. I get that. So we will work forward and try and do what we can. But whether it's emerald ash borer or anything else, you know, we're making choices between nursing homes and trees. It's a choice we're making today. So in our division, we are cutting what we are asked. In fact, we're cutting more than any other division in agriculture in this bill. And we don't have the money to do that program. If it's a priority in DNR or anywhere else, they can certainly prioritize and do it. We don't have the money in agriculture to do it.
Okay, other discussion in agriculture? Any other discussion then on the vets portion of that as well, which is article number 6 on page 63? Representative Jenke, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll get your roommate up, Representative Rukavina. The first one is article 1 on page 2. First of all, Representative Rukavina, have you made your target?
I feel like a target, Mr. Chair, but yeah, I did.
Very good. Do you want to take Article 2 first? The higher education.
Almost $47 million in 10 and 11, and the $93,490 that you asked me in the next biennium. So, members, the Office of Higher Education, we just cut the administration, just as the executive branch suggested, and then we actually had to cover the reciprocity agreement with North Dakota because of the little glitch, so you see that we spent a little money there. We cut the Minsky system, as you can see, $10,467,000, and the university, the $36,120,000, and then we met our targets at DEED. And I guess the highlights there are, you know, the cuts may be a little different than the governor's, but the revenue, we picked up $1.5 million, of the biggest chunk from the Job Skill Partnership. There was a carry forward there, and there's still a balance there. And then in the labor and industry, we took $700,000 from the contractor recovery fund and paid it to the general fund, and from the assigned risk safety grants, which is not the program, Representative McNamara. You know, that's just a small program, I think, that's funded by Staken. And there are some fee increases in here. At Dolly, for just 1 year, it raises about $1,225,000. It's a safety issue. There's not inspections going on, in electrical inspections particularly. And I don't think the Department of Labor and Industry opposed it. There's a $225,000 fee increase for the cosmetology board and a $60,000 increase for the barber board, and some changes to the state grant program to try to mitigate what would have been some really tough cuts there, because no one's ever, the governor didn't address the $43 million that that program is already in the hole, kind of, because of the you know, the demand on it from people that have been laid off and have gone back to school. So that's the bill.
Okay, questions? Representative Holbrook?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Ruth Covina, you mentioned a fee in Dalek and Cosmetology Board and Barber Board. Can you tell us how much and what are you taxing or feeing or?
The fee.
Representative Ruth Covina.
There was a request because of the fee that's it's a $450 actually it raises $1,225,000 and the electrical inspectors because there's such a shortage and we had transferred money out of the construction code last year to pay back to the general fund and the governor never asked for it back, so it's being transferred out. There's not enough money to run the department there. And there are electrical inspections that aren't being made. And everyone's worried, and I think Commissioner Swiggum is worried, too, that, there's going to be safety issues as far as fires and that. So it'll try to help the good contractors, and that's what it's there for.
Mr. Chair, I'm still not clear. Who is paying the fee? I mean, are you...
Representative Ruth Covina.
When you do wiring, you're an electrical contractor, if I'm not mistaken. And it's for a permit. And so the permit went up for just 1 year to raise this $1,225,000, and then the fee goes away after 1 year.
Representative Holbrook.
The increase.
Give me an idea if I have an electrician come out to my house and put in air conditioning and I got to have an electrician come out to wire the box, how much more is a homeowner going to pay for
$4.25 on a permit. $4.50.
Okay. Other questions on that?
Mr. Chair, yes. The cosmetology and the barber board, we heard how much, but is it people that are applying for licenses are going to pay more or people that get their hair done are going to pay more?
Representative Ruth Covina.
Mr. Chair, it's all those different fees was asked for by, there were a couple of bills because of some legislators actually.
Representative Gunther is.
Representative Gunther is carrying the bill for the Barbers Board because that divorce hasn't been child support or something. There's an argument. I don't know what. So, but that raises $60,000 in fees, and then the cosmetology stuff raises $225,000. That's our best estimate, and I believe that sunsets in 3. Was there a sunset on that or not, Mr. Burke? I thought we did, but maybe we threatened to do it, but we didn't. Representative Mahoney was involved in that too. So.
Representative Westrom. Question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Riccovina, I just want to make sure I understand this. We're going to raise fees on permits when a third or half of our trades contractors are pretty much sitting idle and building and remodeling projects are not happening. Does that make a lot of sense to you?
Well, Mr. Representative Rukavina, let me try to answer that. Representative Westrom, I built a garage this summer and had a new service put in. And asked the electrical inspector to come out and inspect it, which needs to be done before I could, I buried the wire, and I had to do that before. Mm-hmm. And I really had a hard time getting the inspector to come in there because they've been cut back so much. And so this, I think, will maybe an additional fee, but I would have gladly have paid the fee to be able to have that electrician or the electrical inspector come around the bar. So there's no easy traces, but, I waited. That trench was open another day and a half because the inspector was behind on the schedule. So.
Well, Mr. Chair, perhaps we could reform our regulation code and focus more on what needs to be inspected, and maybe there's some changes that way that would be different than raising fees. There's more than one way to skin a cat.
Well, Representative Westrom, I know that I would have liked to have buried that electrical wire the way I wanted to bury it, but it was probably for my grandkids when they dig it up. It was good that it was inspected and done the correct way. Representative Rukavina, response?
Not to St. Patrick's Day. I didn't want to get in a fight.
Any other discussion? Any other discussion? Then, Representative Rukavina, I guess you're set to go. Representative Paymar. Public Safety, page 89. Representative Fremar, first of all, did you make your target of negative 35,923?
Chair, we did.
Okay, Representative Fremar, you got a very quick synopsis of it.
Well, Mr. Chair, we basically tried to have a very balanced approach to these reductions. Roughly, the cuts are spread out between the courts, the Department of Public Safety, the Department of Corrections being the largest divisions, or largest departments under this division. But we even made the cuts to some of the smaller departments, thinking that it was fair and more equitable. The cuts range from 1% to the Department of Correction. Department of Corrections, the courts get a total of 1.6 in reduction, and the Board of Public Defense 1.4, and that's basically the highlights. Mr. Chair, we followed a lot of the governor's recommendations, but we also made some other choices in our committee. I answer any specific questions.
Okay, questions on public safety. Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Paymer, did you take any fund balances or raise any fees?
Representative Paymer. Mr.
Chair, Representative Holbrook, well, we exhausted our ability to raise any fees by raising $50 million last year, so we did not raise any fees, but we did take the, roughly follow the governor's recommendation on the fire safety account, and although unlike the governor's proposal, we appropriated $1 million for fire safety training. But yes, we took the fund balance for this year.
Mr. Chair and Chair Paymer, how much was that?
$9 million.
Is it 9.9?
10.9 million is it's a one-time transfer.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions? Any other questions on that section? Representative Paymer, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's go then next to the energy, page 27. Representative Hilty, page 27. Did you meet your target, Representative Hilty?
Mr. Chair, we did. The target that we had was $49,749,000. We exceeded the target by $21,000. The bill provides for $49,770,000.
So we counted it in your resolution already. So, Representative Hilty, you want to give a synopsis of your article?
Mr. Chair and members, we began our budget deliberations by considering the governor's recommendations, and we followed all of the governor's recommendations with two minor exceptions. Then contemplated what else we could do to contribute to the reduction of the deficit, and like the transportation division, the energy division has a very small part of the general fund. We have less than $58 million in general funds in the division. There are a number of special revenue accounts in the division, and working with the Department of Commerce that administers those accounts, we tried to determine as best we could what excess balances might exist in those accounts that could be cut without or accessed without affecting the functioning of the account, and that resulted in a number of revenue transfers from special revenue funds. The major ones of those are $3 million from the Petroleum Tank Release Cleanup Fund. There's an accumulation of smaller transfers that amounted to $5 million from various special revenue funds. There is, as Chairman Carlson alluded to earlier, a transfer from the Workers' Compensation Assigned Risk Plan to the General Fund of $15 million. And in addition to that, an increase in the mutual fund securities registration fee from 1/20 of 1% to 1/10 of 1%, which is estimated to bring in $25 million in the biennium.
Okay, questions? Representative McNamara?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mistakenly wanted to ask Representative Rukavina about this $15 million transfer. I assumed it was in his jurisdiction. Representative Hilty, I'm referring to the transfer from the Work Comp Assigned Risk Plan. That plan is set up for employers who can't qualify for traditional workers' compensation, and so the state wisely set up a plan so they would be covered under workers' compensation. Can you tell me how much those businesses, small and large, will now pay? What will their increases be in their cost of doing business in this state because we raided this fund of $15 million?
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, it's my understanding that this would not result in any increase in what the people who are assessed for this fund would pay. There's currently a balance in the fund of $50 million, would leave a balance of 35, which would we, in consultation with the Department of Commerce, deemed to be adequate to cover the expenses. The assessments are ongoing, and there would not be contemplated any increase in the assessments to cover this transfer.
Representative McNamara, when you were holding your side was holding the gavel, and you transferred $200 million from that fund, also to the general fund, I think the answer for the question, was there going to be an increase, was the same as what Representative Hilty said.
And if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Chair, I didn't support that then, and I'm not going to support this now. This is absolutely wrong, Chair Hilty. This is $15 million from employers small and large throughout Minnesota that can't buy regular workers' comp. The fund's got a fund balance in it, if I'm not mistaken, equal to about 6% of their claims, if I'm not mistaken. So to say it's plenty of extra money and to actually think that we're going to take $15 million out of a work comp insurance fund and it's not going to cost anybody anything. Okay, it doesn't cost them any. They could lower their premiums $15 million next year if we didn't rob the fund. The governor didn't rob this fund. These are businesses that are in the assigned risk pool because they don't qualify for regulars' work comp. These are small and large businesses throughout Minnesota that are working their tail to stay in this state and be part of it and be legitimate, have workers' compensation insurance, so if their workers get hurt, they get stuck in the assigned risk pool, which can happen to any of us if you happen to have an unfortunate accident. And many of us who've been in business for a long time, once in a while, have been in that assigned risk plan. And thank goodness it's there. And to think whether it's $200 million under Republican leadership or $15 million now or $10 million next year or whatever. It's wrong. The governor didn't do that. We don't need to do it, and we shouldn't be robbing from places like this to do this to small business. No wonder they're leaving our state. If you're a small business in Hastings, you're going to move over to Prescott, Wisconsin, where they don't do this. This is wrong, and we should not be doing it.
Other questions from Representative Hilty? Other questions, though? Any other questions? If not, Representative Hilty, thank you. Then the next one on the list, Representative Wagenius, Environment, page 15.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. The target we had was...
First of all, Representative Wagenius, did you meet your target?
Yes.
Very good.
Both in the regular target and in tails, our target was $16,300,000. Of that, $12,889,000 was general fund reductions from the agencies. The way we looked at this was the cumulative impact between the governor's unallotments and the cuts that we made. So here are the percentages. For the Pollution Control Agency, it was a 9.1% cut. For the Department of Natural Resources, excluding PILT and open fire, it's 6.8% cut. DNR PILT is a 6.5% cut. Bowser, Board of Water and Soil Resources, a 6.5% cut. Metropolitan Council Park, 6.5% cut. The one place we didn't cut, but terribly small account, was for the Minnesota Conservation Corps. We did do some moving of accounts, two recommended by the governor, and then three cancellations of flood monies from southeast money that were from 2008, and one transfer from Bowser of return grant funds, and that totals up to my target.
Okay, other questions in this article? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, I think you were here for Representative Junkie earlier. I'm just curious, and you and I have never had this discussion, do you support the idea of moving the Protective Services Program to the DNR from Ag, and then did you make arrangements to fund that in your budget?
Representative Wagenius.
Well, first of all, Representative McNamara, I was making major cuts, so there was no money to fund any new program in DNR. Their total cuts with the governor's unallotment is 6.8% cut. So, no, there are no additional funds to do a new program. I think Minnesotans are going to see real cuts, and this is one of them.
Other questions, Representative McNamara?
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to clarify, you called it a new program. It's an existing program in Department of Ag now that Representative Junkie would like to see DNR take over, but you don't have any arrangements in your budget to take over this program.
Representative Wagenius?
The two places where that would show up in our budget would be in the area of forestry, and I was careful not to reduce forestry, waters, or parks and trails as much as anything else to avoid the supplant issue. Nonetheless, forestry was cut 5%, and that is, of course, cumulative. And then ecological services was 3.9%. So the kinds of things you're talking about would be really in both of those areas, I believe.
Representative, any other discussion? Representative Davids?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Madam Chair, you mentioned flood relief for southeastern Minnesota, and looking at the spreadsheet, it looks like it's $335,000. Was that just money that wasn't used for flood recovery?
Representative Wagenius?
I didn't. I just didn't hear what you said.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Madam Chair. You mentioned flood relief for southeastern Minnesota being cut back, and I see on the spreadsheet it's $335,000. Is that money that wasn't used, or was that still waiting for someone?
Representative Wagenius.
There were three little pots of money from the 2008 flood money that hadn't been used. One was in DNR, and we canceled that. That was $335,000. One was from Bowser, and one was from Bowser from the Clean Water Funds. So there were three different pots of money.
Representative Davis.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Madam Chair. Do you have the total for those three accounts? I see the one at $335,000. Do you know what the total is for all three?
Representative Wagenius.
The second one was $245,000, and the third one was $1,328,000. I didn't total them up individually.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, what was the last one?
Well, I know cookies are being around. We'll make an exception since I like the cookies too, so we can eat here. But the last one, Representative Wagenius.
$1,328,000.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Madam Chair.
Other questions at all? Other questions? If not, then Representative Clark. We have the housing one, page 76. Representative Clark, did you make your target?
We did, Mr. Chairman, and I think we exceeded it by 3.
Just give a very quick synopsis.
Sure. We basically adopted the governor's recommendations with two exceptions. We cut $4.9 million in each of the bienniums. We did not ratify the governor's unallotments in the second biennium, however, and increased the cuts to the two agencies in the first biennium. And the agencies that were, or the programs that were cut were the Preservation Affordable Rental Investment Program, which is a loan program to help rehab and finance public housing that's in danger of losing federal assistance, and then the Rental Rehab Loan Program that helps small owners of small rental properties to improve their investments. The total cut percentage cuts about 6% to the base, to the agency's appropriation.
Questions on this portion of the bill? Any questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Clark, we should have had you up earlier. You could have gotten home. And the last one, I think, is before us, the state government. Representative Kahn. Page 103. On your way up, Representative McConnell asked the question, did you make your cut?
Yes.
And she said yes. Do you want to give us a synopsis, Representative McConnell?
Mr. Chairman and members, this bill was very largely consistent with the governor's recommendations. We did, the bill cuts $32.7 million from the state government general fund budget. The governor recommended $40.3 million in cuts. The governor cut deeper for several reasons, but mainly because his cuts went across agencies, and we decided we need those in the individual divisions instead of making them in our division. So one of the interesting, one of the places where the governor's largest cut, we also picked up the governor's tax compliance initiative from the Department of Revenue, which netted $20.1 million. And so the governor, the bill cut the governor's office an additional $30,000 over the governor's recommendation, and this was money transferred from the Veterans Support Our Troops License Plate Fund to the governor's office. We put that back in the Support Our Troops Fund, which is where we thought the people buying those license plates wanted it to be. The governor, the one major difference was that the governor recommended giving MMB Finance Authority to cut an additional $9 million from agency operating budgets. And again, that would mainly be from outside the committee. And he also had kind of one single run-on sentence about how the efficiencies that were supposed to make this up consisting mainly of information, better information management. But we only did a $2.6 million cut here, and we required these cuts, and we went into a more extensive analysis of where the cuts could be made. Although we lumped them all together, we didn't assign a specific number to any possible cut. And what we did was we said we'd use available state office space, reduce out-of-state travel, reduce energy usage in state buildings, reduce reliance on professional and technical contracts, increase telecommuting, consolidation of information technology capacities, and the consolidation of state fleet management. And these were all enterprise items that are within the division's jurisdiction. And if it fails to cut the $2.6 million using this authority, it then has to cut agency operating budgets to reach that objective. I think that's the thing of the greatest interest in it, and I'll answer any questions.
Questions at all? Any questions? Yes, Chair. Representative Holberg.
Chair Kahn, do you rename anything in this bill?
I think...
Representative Kahn probably does not, but you should ask the question,
Chairman,
is anything renamed in this
bill? Oh, Mr. Chair, I'm new to state government finance. This is the first biennium I've been on the committee, and I think there's always four or five things that change names every single year, so it's...
Representative
Kahn...
I'm
just curious.
Well, I think the bill, is there something that's renamed?
There is a renaming of the MAPS SWIFT system.
And where is that on the bill, Madam Chair?
What page is that? I don't know. Can I have help?
Oh. Well, thank you. I guess it's on page 111, lines 18 and 19. So there's a little creative license in the bill.
Mr. Chairman, as a member of the division, Representative Holberg, I believe you voted for it and I voted against it. So.
Not quite true, but we'll leave it at that.
You said I believe.
and I'm not going to argue with her.
All right. Any other questions? Representative Westrum.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, you talked about the tax compliance money. What do we do? I've heard this this idea of tax compliance since Representative Abrams used to be in the legislature, and I mean, we were told then if we put 20 more million into it, we'll get this much more out of a shakedown, and every year it seems like we go back to another 20 million. How many 20s of millions have we given the department? And What is it in the result? And let me just go to my conclusion with you. It seems like I get more and more calls from people who are getting literally harassed and just give up and just pay a bill because it seems like they're getting shaken down. Are we going too far, or could we put another $20 million on top of this and shake a little more out of this arena?
Well,
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, tax compliance is based on the fact that the state's finances are best managed by having the people who honestly owe taxes honestly pay those taxes. The governor, this was actually an idea which we've usually pushed further than the governor has wanted to in our committee. They have always met the targets. The targets are about 4-1. So to get the $20 million that we're getting from this bill, we're putting in 1/4 of that, which is five something. And the advice I would give to anyone is not to give up if they're being wrongly harassed. They need to just bite back. And it's not pleasant when the government says you owe more taxes and you have to argue about why you don't. This was the first time the committee has usually pressed the governor further than their recommendations have been. This was actually the first time that we did not do that. We took exactly the governor's recommendations on tax compliance. They have always met the proportion that we've estimated that they've met, and they've never fallen beyond that. So I think we're on the right track. And again, I think the argument is there any reason for anyone who doesn't legitimately owe taxes not to pay them? And our answer is no.
Representative Westrum is one who has gone through an IRS audit for 2 years. It's not necessarily a pleasant experience to do. But when I got done with the audit, I did indeed approve everything. I made a mistake and counted a deduction twice, 1 year, and two deductions twice another year, one from that. And so I had a zero obligation to the federal government, but I voluntarily wrote a check for back taxes to the state for $4 for 1 year and for $17.50 for the next year. I did it voluntarily.
Mr. Solberg, I wasn't, Representative Solberg, I wasn't looking for confession here.
I'm just, what I'm saying is that an audit is an audit. I don't know why I was chosen, but I had the records to back it up. Mm-hmm. I made a mistake and went a deduction and paid the taxes.
Mr. Chairman, with that strategy in mind, I think we've just solved a budget deficit, Mr. Chairman.
Well, for $4 and some...
No. Representative Kahn said it's a 4-to-1 return. We got $100 billion deficit. Let's just put $1 billion into this tax compliance, and we can call it a day. We even cover your unallotment lawsuit if you would win.
Representative Westrum, in all honesty, there was a, when you bring up Representative Abrams, former Representative Abrams' name, I think he was chair of the taxes committee, mm-hmm. and there was an audit, legislative audit report, I believe, on uncollected taxes or taxes that were owed the state that weren't collected. And if I recall right, it was estimated to be about $1 billion. Now, the tax chair recalls that legislative audit as well. And so legitimately, when you and I pay our taxes, we do it, we always look through to see, make sure we get legitimate deductions. Don't pay any more than we have to. That's human nature. But when someone doesn't pay the taxes that they are due, the rest of us should be concerned about that. And the audit is an audit.
Mr. Chairman, and I think could probably have Representative Rukavina pitch in on this, but he's not here right now. But Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, let me just share a conversation, and maybe you see this differently than I do, but we've got a party, a small business running a hair salon. They have a washer and dryer in their facility to wash their towels, and they are not able to deduct the expense of that washer and dryer. That's the kind of stuff that is coming out of these audits as well. Now, maybe you, Representative Kahn or Representative Solberg, don't think that would be a legitimate business expense. It sure strikes me as it would be. But just so you know, that is the kind of stuff that is also coming out of this. And so at some point, we got to be a little careful, because for a $1,000 or $500 audit bill, you can't hire too many lawyers or stay up at night losing sleep over that too long. But at some point, they are the citizens, and they have some rights as well. Just because the tax man says they owe it doesn't mean we haven't given them a legitimate deduction that they wouldn't owe, but it isn't worth fighting. So that's my concern.
Mr. Chairman, I've never sat on the tax committee. I know that the list of deductions is very complicated and difficult to get through. But I also assume that the members of the tax committee have made sure that they're very fair. So I have no, there may be legitimate arguments about whether something should be a deduction, a business expense deduction or not. My family also had an audit, Mr. Chairman, and I'm not the mathematician in my family, so I don't do the taxes. The other person in the family does the taxes, and we had a federal IRS, and then I think it went to the state, and we ended up getting a refund of much more than they said that they owed. So the expense that we made was in the other direction, and the audits picked those up too. So you know, essentially. And as I've said, we, you know, the Commissioner Einars was very strong in saying, as you keep doing this, you know, the first thing you pick are the low-hanging fruit, and then it gets harder and harder to do this. And, the Commissioner said that this was, I think his exact quote was, this was not his first choice of what to do, nor his second choice, nor his 27th choice. But by the time they got finished doing the governor's budget, he felt it was the only thing they could do, and we just took his recommendation.
Other questions? Representative Francesca.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And on this item, I think Representative Kahn's done a good job of sort of laying out the issue at hand here. And some folks may recall that a few years ago, Representative Kahn and I had a joint hearing to have the State Gov Finance and the Tax Committee kind of think through this whole compliance thing. And Representative Solberg is absolutely right. There's been an outstanding about $1 billion uncollected. And you certainly can't collect it all. You're a police state, as Representative Westrom has laid out. I mean, nor would anyone want to. We don't want an auditor standing in everybody's living room. I think the issue here, though, I mean, we need to put it in perspective. It's $20 million. The governor's proposed it. The other thing I would say that if you actually look at the language, which I was just looking for on page 107 and 8, I think there's been a fair effort here to really sort of do some assessment of what is the most efficient and effective way to collect the revenue, what kind of tax analytics are people going to look at, because you really do want to not sort of run around and harass people for $4. I mean, and that's not the goal in tax compliance. I think as policymakers, what we have to keep in mind when we think about this stuff, because we have to measure the intrusive nature of government when they're auditing against people's freedom, but the credibility of a tax system is undermined when people do not trust it. And Minnesotans have to think that when they're paying their taxes, their next-door neighbor is too. And so this is a critical component for any solid revenue stream for any government, that people believe that in equal situations they're treated equally, and that when somebody is not contributing, someone is checking on that and making sure they are. So it is something we all have to weigh in our minds, but there's very good policy behind trying to do tax compliance. The net effect for everyone else is that they either pay less in taxes when people who are supposed to pay their taxes are found and have to, or they get more services for the same dollar. So it benefits most of Minnesota, and it is sometimes uncomfortable. But I think it should be noted that the committee did try to sort of target how they were going to do this, and the language expresses that, and I think they've done a really good job.
Other questions on this particular?
If I could just add one more facet to that. We did put some language, I'm not sure exactly where it is, but we did put some language on looking at some business intelligence analytics to try and, again, look for things that are missing in tax compliance. And this was actually suggested to the by committee member Representative Joyce Pepin, and we did put this in at her suggestion.
Other discussion on it? If not, then, members, we have gone through the entire sections of 1671. I appreciate your indulgence. The next one we're going to call up then is Representative Menchesky, and we have before us House File 2077.
And I think then we should temporarily lay over House File 1671, unless you want to take the other one as an amendment and then explain it.
I thought maybe we could take this as an amendment,
okay,
and then explain it.
Just keep
it up before us. So Representative Lincheski then would move an amendment to House File 1671, and the language of the amendment is included in House File 2077. And House File 2077 would be then be laid on the table. So Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just would ask members to, you're getting a green packet. That's what you want to look at. You know, Mr. Chair, I don't think you want to get into a deep discussion of everything here, but I do want members to know it's available to you. It's been available to the public online. And these are the county runs for aid for 2010 and 2011. So everyone can look at their counties. These are the city runs, additionally. There is, of course, the spreadsheet here that shows we have met our target both in this biennium and next. And no, there are no fees. Although the governor did propose some in taxes, we did not choose to take them. So we're meeting our target with a straight-up cut in three areas: local government aid, county program aid, and Market Value Homestead Credit. And just maybe for the public, Mr. Chair, I think the way to think about this is all Minnesotans live in a county. So all Minnesotans benefit from county program aid, even if they've never heard of it. There's not a single person in Minnesota who doesn't live in a county. So they're a beneficiary of that program. All parts of the state receive Market Value Homestead Credit, and then local government aid is another program based on the tax capacity of communities and their ability to meet their needs. We are trying to take the most judicious approach here in a cut here. It's about 2.5 times smaller than the governor. He's proposing cutting 250 this year. We're proposing cutting 105. I have to say that the tax committee, I want to thank both the majority members who worked so hard in trying to put this together in the most geographically balanced and fair way possible, and the minority members who, I really it was remiss in not saying in tax committee, I want to say for the record tonight, Mr. Chair, that the tax committee members in the minority were very patient and tolerant with a tight time frame to get information, to understand what was in the bill, to see the runs, and to look at things. And we're very gracious about that process, and I really want to thank Representative Broad and all the members of the minority on the tax committee who really could have cried foul a little more and did not. And so I really, really, truly appreciate that. I think the way to think about the cuts overall here is, what's going on in 2010? We're in 2010. A whole bunch of people around the table have been locally elected officials, so that money's out the door, right? I mean, 2010, the levies have been set by the local units of government. People are paying their taxes now. So in 2010, the cuts will be borne and absorbed by cities and counties. They will not be borne by residents of Minnesota. And how is that possible? Well, the Market Value Homestead Credit cuts, you know, again, these taxes have already been set. The Minnesotans who are going to receive a credit on their taxes in 2010 already got it. It was already minused off their total taxes paid. So the problem then for folks in taxes is what you have to do then to make a 2010 cut, because the levies have been set. You really have to have the cities and counties that absorb that cut. And that's what they're doing here. There are no Minnesota homeowners who will see an increase in property taxes in 2010 related to this bill at all. Their cities and counties will have to make some tough choices. And we want to recognize that, because we don't feel good about that. In 2011 and going forward, we rejiggered things a little bit to very intentionally not only cut local government aid and county program aid and market value credit, but to really try to bring into the wealthiest communities onto the formula cuts in market value homestead credit, which was you couldn't do in 2010 because, again, those communities are zeroed out on aid. They've lost all their aid through unallotments prior, so you couldn't go in and take it. So the majority members very intentionally tried to design the system not only geographically fair, and it cuts about 50-50 metro, rural, and in 10, and then a little stronger burden in 11 and going forward, because when you bring on the wealthier tax-based communities and you try to cut based on the ability to pay, you're going to hit a little harder in the metro, because that's where the majority of the wealthier communities are. So I want to be really upfront about that's how it plays out. That was by design, to sort of let the folks who can absorb a little more of a hit absorb a little more of a hit, and those who are really sort of in dire straits take less of a hit. But recognizing that all of Minnesota, again, everybody lives in a county, all of Minnesota is going to feel either, you know, or is going to feel reduced services as a result of this cut, and we don't feel good about it, but we're very proud of the fact that we left it very much smaller than the governor. Again, $105 million versus $250 million. We balanced it regionally. We brought in some smoothing techniques so that no city will lose more than $28 per capita. Without those techniques, we had some folks losing up to $48 per capita. And so we really wanted to sort of cap anybody's burden at some level so that the cities and counties could sustain it. And I think if anyone wants me to walk through any parts of the spreadsheet or the runs, I'm happy to do it, but I'm trying to do kind of a big picture approach.
That's good. Any questions on this bill? Representative Fulbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chairman Teske, with market value homestead credit, and you come from a community that doesn't get local government aid, and we saw the governor on a lot. I don't know if Bloomington was the same as Lakeville, but all of the market value homestead credit. My understanding is in the bill you make that permanent. The 2010 cuts are extended to 2011. Is that correct?
The portion. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg. Yes, we modeled the governor's method, and we take his 2010 market value homestead credit cut in the communities, as you've just stated, and we make them permanent.
And then, Mr. Chair, do you then make additional cuts beyond that?
Representative Lincheski.
We are cutting, but nothing near the governor. If you look on the runs, every city in the state of Minnesota either is cut significantly less than the governor or is at the governor. So you're either the same or less, and the few sames are communities like yours, Representative Holberg, or mine, where you're bringing that aid back on. So then that situation, you'd be the same as the governor. So and you can look on the run. I'm not sure what page you're on, but I could find it for you.
I'm trying to understand how you can even talk about market value homestead credit anymore as a statewide program that makes any sense.
Representative Lincheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, Representative Holberg, members know Representative Holberg doesn't serve on taxes, but she knows a lot about taxes, and she's a former city council member, and this is an ongoing frustration for lots of cities, and you're very well aware of it. And we are going to have to tackle the nuances of this program. What people often think, though, because communities like yours receive such large cuts, and they're the first cut because they're wealthier, is people think, oh, that's a suburban program. It's actually 58% of all the money in market value homestead credit goes to rural Minnesota. It's disproportionately a rural program. So there's a lot of misunderstanding about the program, but what we've tried to do is do the program the way the governor did, which is not have it land on the homeowner. None of our constituents take the hit. Our local units of governments are going to have to make those decisions.
But Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lincheski, you're not addressing my issue in that this was a statewide program set up for low-valued homes and their proportionality in their community. You said that 58% of it's for greater Minnesota. I mean, I'd be curious what percent of market value homestead cuts are coming from greater Minnesota. I'm assuming much smaller than that in the total dollars. But my point is that how can you have a program that you say is a statewide program based on characteristics of housing, and then large chunks of the state never get their fair share?
Representative Lincheski.
I mean, it's a perverted program. As 6 out of 8 years, many communities have gotten nothing. I mean, when are we going to just be real and revamp the program?
Representative Lincheski.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to work with you on that, but I think why it is the way it is because when you're cutting, you could say, let's do a per capita equal cut, a flat cut, and we are silent in our value system as to whether you're in an extremely wealthy situation or extremely poor, and as I stated, that was by design. We made a value decision to say that those folks who have a lot more net tax capacity and ability to levy are going to contribute as well because they don't receive the other aids. So, you know, you could legitimately, when you're bringing money in, it's easy to make that all happen, but when you're cutting, you have to start somewhere. And, you know, you could start by cutting the poorest first or the richest first, or you could say everyone's going to get the exact same cut. We followed the governor's model here, and that's what he did. He started with the wealthiest communities and moved downward in his market value homestead credit cuts. And we've followed his exact same model. And again, we have not put it on the homeowner. The homeowner will receive it. The city and the county will have to make a decision on whether they will try to absorb that through layoffs, through other cuts, through levying some of it back. I mean, they will have to make those decisions. So we have made it difficult for those local units of government.
And, Mr. Chair, I think many communities, I mean, I know that my community just assumed for their budgeting purposes this year they weren't getting anything. So, I mean, they are getting exactly what they expected, Zippo. But I guess, did you do any look at per capita spending levels? as communities. When we have communities that get more local government aid per capita than other cities spend per capita.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, because it's based on levy plus aid. So that's inherent in the formula. So that brings in spending. It's levy plus aid. And your levies are spending. So that's the base we took it off of downward, same way the governor did. You could do an average net tax capacity. It would be the other way you could do it. There's sort of policy arguments on both. But, you know, I want to be clear, too. We're trying to get the bill signed. And this is basically the governor's cut with some changes and some smoothing, only 2.5 times smaller. So we thought if we took market value homestead credit straight away from the resident, you know, Representative Holberg loses her property tax relief, he'd veto that. You know, I mean, that would be a straight up property tax increase to homeowners, and we didn't want to do that. And so this bill doesn't have that.
Other discussion? Any other discussion? Then we have the motion before us, which is to the amendment to House File 1671, and Chesky renews her motion that the amendment be the words in House File 2077 and that House File 2077 be laid on the table. All those in favor of that amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? And carried.
Mr. Chair,
yeah,
I'd like a roll call on the bill, please.
Sure, roll call will be quick. There's one final amendment that we need to make. And this is, the chair will make this, that we instruct the staff to make any technical or cross-reference changes. I would move that amendment. All those in favor, did you want to move it?
Well, that should be after you.
Yeah, after you.
No, you've moved it. It's an amendment.
To the bill?
Just a motion
just
afterwards?
Just a motion afterwards.
Okay, I'm sorry. I withdraw.
It's not an amendment to the bill.
Okay, it's not an amendment. It'd be a motion. Okay. Thank you for correcting the parliamentary. Any other discussion on the bill? If not, then Representative Carlson renews his motion that House File 1671, as amended, be recommended to pass based on the general roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Solberg.
Yes.
Abler. Reiner.
Yes.
Bunn. Carlson.
Yes.
Davids.
No.
Dean.
Nope.
Demmer.
No.
Eakin.
Yes.
Faust. Hamilton.
No.
Hillstrom.
Yes.
Holberg.
No.
Hoppe.
No.
Huntley.
Yes.
Kahn.
Yes.
Lincheski.
Yes.
Mahoney. Mariani. McNamara.
No.
Nelson.
Yes.
Otremba.
No.
Rood. Scalzi.
Yes.
Swales.
Yes.
Tilbury.
Yes.
Westrom.
No.
There being 12 ayes and 9 nays, the amendment or the bill does pass and is placed on the general registry. The next bill before us is House File 802, Representative Murphy. The chair or Representative Huntley, would you like to make a motion?
Didn't you have to make a motion?
Well, let me make a technical motion first. I would then like to move now, if I may, that the staff be directed to make technical corrections and additions that or mistakes that are made in House File 1671. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Okay, Representative Murphy. Representative Huntley?
Mr. Chair, I would move that House File 803 is
802
be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register.
Representative, you heard the motion, and there's an amendment in our packet. Representative Murphy, I assume you want that amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Huntley, would you be so kind as to move the A7-2 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I'd move the A7-2 amendment.
Okay. And Representative Huntley, Representative Murphy, this is technical and got some fiscal moving around on it?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. You heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And carried. Representative Murphy, I think most of us know what this bill is, but you want to give a brief description of it?
Mr. Chair and members, this House File 802 is the legislation that is the result of a lot of work by a lot of members, both sides of the aisle, and the administration over the course of many months. And it is the proposal that I am bringing forward in terms of, or in order to restore triage general assistance medical care. So this is the GAMC bill.
Okay.
And, you know, I've hardly been able to present this bill when Matt Dean's been in the room, but Representative Dean is here, and he should be sitting here with me because he's been, you know, we've been through a lot together. And then Representative Huntley should be up here as well. But I think for you, I'm happy to go through a description of the bill if you'd like, or I'm happy to go through the financial part of the legislation. It is whatever you would prefer, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Bevin?
Yes, I think people understand the bill. There is a fiscal note that's in your packet. That is the same fiscal note that was in the subsection of the Health and Human Service cut, the 710, that was given to us on budget resolution. I knew it would come. That's all. Any discussion or question? Representative Dean, do you have a statement you want to make at all on this one? You've been intimately involved in this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to Representative Murphy. This does represent a lot of work by folks on both sides of the aisle and the administration in an effort to find a piece of legislation that the legislature could agree to, that the governor could sign. It's one that's not going to make everybody happy. It's one that makes a lot of people equally unhappy, but it does provide some very important things for a very difficult patient population, one that I think will receive the right care at the right place at the right time. People will argue whether or not it's adequately funded. People will argue whether or not we can do this quickly enough, but I think that had it not been for the situation that we find ourselves in, we would not have been able to produce coordinated care organizations across the state. I think that the predicament that we're in presented a challenge but also an opportunity, and it's one that that we will be working through, and that the hospitals, we are asking a lot of them, they are up to the challenge and they're ready. And particularly, I think it's important for members to know that this is a patient population of 30,000 in a state of over 5 million. This is a difficult population, but one that I think will benefit from coordinated care. It is a concept that the MMA, the Hospitals Association, the Democrats, and the Republicans all gathered around, and one that we are promoting, and it's an experiment, and it's one that I'm looking forward to see move forward on a vote off the floor. So I thank Representative Murphy for all of her work and for Representative Huntley and the majority in finding a bill that the governor could sign, and look forward to its passage.
Any questions? Representative Murphy, just my personal thanks to you for your leadership on this as well. This is not an easy topic, and I'm just thankful that you did it and I didn't have to.
Well, thank you for that, Mr. Chair. I do want to underscore one point that Representative Dean made, and that this is a new concept. It is something that the idea of care coordination for a discrete population is something that I think many in the legislature are coming around to understanding its value. But we're making a quick transition, and I think this is going to be a challenge for providers, hospitals. I've been over the last few days, as the language has been out, and as people have been reading it, I've been talking with some of the hospital systems, and they are having various reactions. Some are very concerned. I'm not sure that the hospitals that administration has suggested may participate as CCOs. They may not participate. So I think, you know, we're going to have to monitor this closely. We're going to have to evaluate it. And I think we're going to have more work to do in the session ahead of this, the one that comes after this one. And I'm committed to that, and I'm sure there are others that are committed to that as well. But I don't want to be up here and pretend that this is a perfect piece of work. The bill that we passed the last time had a lot more funding in it. It was more fairly distributed, but that was a bill the governor wouldn't sign. And so this is where we are today. And I just want to be on the record and acknowledge, and I know Mike Mahoney is here from St. Mary's in Duluth, and we've been talking a lot this week. They're very concerned in Duluth. We're trying to respond to those concerns within the concept or within the framework of our agreement or as we go forward in the budget. And I just want to be on the record as saying that, because I know he's up there and he's looking pretty stern, and I know he's worried, and so is his hospital. There's one final oral amendment I'd like to make before you vote on the bill, if that's okay.
All right, sure, you can do that if there's an oral
amendment. I'll offer it, and then someone else will have to move it. But on page 5, line 5.9, in the drafting, there was language, or there's a repealer in here that we don't want to repeal, and it is the one in the center.
Let's see. No, wait a second.
Okay.
Is it on the amendment itself?
It's on the, yes, it is on the
amendment. It's on the amendment.
Sorry.
Page 5. Not the bill. 5.9, you said?
5.9.
Okay.
Section 256L.05, subdivision 1B. Should be reinstated.
Okay, so the chair then would move that on the amendment that was adopted, page 5, line 9, delete section, the words sections 256L.05, comma, subdivision 1B.
And,
that's
and
correct?
We'd like to reinstate that.
Oh, leave the word sections in, but just start with 2.56.
Yep.
I'll leave this word in. And since we have adopted this already, this would be another amendment then. Is that correct? Everyone understands it? Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed and carried. Members, we have it before us. Representative Huntley, I guess he left. The chair would then, Representative Hillstrom, would you move that House File 802 as amended? We recommend to pass and we refer to the General Registry.
I will, Mr. Chair.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed and carried. Members, thank you for your patience tonight.
Thank you.
Please drive safely on the way home. The meeting is adjourned.